remember that to many white Southerners, Republican meant abolitionist. And abolitionist had all kinds of awful connotations. A Republican victory might loose a flood of John Browns on the South. That kind of fear, I think, helped make this canvass all the more emotional in much of the South. In fact, during the course of the campaign, just about every leader from the lower South, that is that bottom tier of Southern states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida, just about every major leader from those lower South or deep South states said that secession might well follow a Republican win. As one of these people put it, this government and Republicanism cannot live together. That is in the words of a Georgian. Now, Republicans tended to discount the talk of secession because they'd heard it before. They'd heard it in the early 1830s from South Carolina. They had heard it again in the early 1850s. To them, it seemed a case of the little boy crying wolf again. If we don't get our way, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We'll secede if we don't get our way. That kind of rhetoric had been present before, and the South had not acted on it. South Carolina hadn't even acted on it. And so many Republicans, most Republicans, I think, simply didn't believe that the South would do anything here. Lincoln stayed in Springfield. He made no public statements during the campaign, none. He said, "My record is clear. If you want to know what my stance is on any issue, look at what I've said. I stand by what I've said. I don't need to add to what I already have placed in the public record." Douglas did take threats of secession seriously. He's the only candidate who campaigned throughout the United States. It was really an act of bravery on his part because he met extremely, extremely hostile crowds in much of the South. There were threats against him in parts of the South. Nonetheless, he campaigned everywhere, calling for union, trying to calm Southern fears. It was a performance, however, that had very little effect in the South. And when he stopped in Mobile, Alabama, the day before the election, his secretary noted that the senator is more hopeless than I have ever seen him before. Douglas gave it his best effort, but it was to no avail. Now, Democratic campaigners in the South, the Breckinridge people, stressed the slavery issue to the exclusion, really, of all others. Democrats in the North concentrated on race. They laid out a range of awful things that they said would happen if the Republicans won. There'd be racial amalgamation, they said. There'd be tremendous competition for white labor by black laborers. They put out cartoons of black people and white people kissing each other while Lincoln and Greeley looked on smiling. It was the most virulent and base kind of racial appeal by the Democratic Party across much of the North. Republicans in the upper North, the more abolitionist, the more anti-slavery parts of the North, stressed the issue of slavery. In the lower North, they tended to focus on economic issues, the tariff in Pennsylvania, internal improvements in the homestead bill in the West and California. So we have different Republican messages in different parts of the nation. The Democrats, the Republicans were quick to point out, had opposed all of these economic measures. And if we can only win this election, we can finally begin to enact our program, they said. They said the fact that dough-faced lackeys like Buchanan, that is, Northern men who tended to side with the South on issues of slavery and on economic issues, those kinds of Northerners had been in league with the South for too long, said the Republicans. It's time to throw them all overboard and try to get our program in place. Now, most abolitionists in the North, black and white, were not thrilled with the Republican Party platform. It didn't go nearly far enough to suit them. It accepted slavery where slavery existed, and of course, they didn't want that. It did keep it out of the territories, which was good, but it didn't go nearly as far as the abolitionists would have had it go. Still, the vast majority of abolitionists supported the Republican Party because among the four choices, it was clearly the party that was most attuned to what the abolitionists hoped to achieve. By the end of the campaign, there was a good deal of genuine enthusiasm across the North for Lincoln, his candidacy, and the Republican Party. There were massive marches and rallies that recalled to many the Great Log Cabin and Hard Cider campaign of William Henry Harrison in 1840. when many of the trappings of modern campaigning first made their appearance on the American stage. The image of Lincoln the rail splitter was perfect for those who subscribed to the free labor ideology, the notion that we owned our labor and we could use that labor to move up into the property owning class. Lincoln was a perfect example of that. He began splitting rails and otherwise working with his hands and soon became a member of the property class and then a prominent member of the property class. Here is a poster child, as it were, for free labor in Abraham Lincoln, and the Republicans made a great deal of that in the North.